All right, let's bring this meeting to order. It's October 4th, 2011, Newbury Park Conservation Commission. And the first item on our agenda is, or are the minutes from September 20th. I think we took care of the other ones last time, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do we have any questions?
Yeah, under 17 Graff Road, the first sentence. Is it the date it's on here, September 2nd?
Oh, it should have been the 21st.
Skip forward. Mr. Russo,
yes.
Your extension, we extended the permit for 2 years last meeting.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
So 3 years?
Yes. There. At this point, yeah. There was an automatic extension. This was part of the automatic extension.
The state act, there was a state right act by the governor to extend all permits anyway for 2 years, so you would have been covered by that anyway, but this gives you the formal approval. We'll be getting you tomorrow. We'll be getting you the formal signed extension from the commission.
It's called the permit extension act.
The board extension is available after 6 years. That's sufficient.
I mean, I'd hope that you could finish within the,
yeah.
the 2 years, but that's up to the commission, really. Is it, are you worried because of the economy, basically?
It's mostly the economy, plus I'm looking at another potential deployment overseas, so maybe.
I would suggest asking for an extension prior to that time.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so DEP did officially release the appeal for 46 Hale Street. We took care of number 3. We discussed number 4.
Can I say that was, if I first took a look at $95 approved?
Yes.
Okay.
As soon as I get the receipt from them, I'll dead end.
Number 4, did you get that plan?
So I don't have it. What I wanted to have was the signed document from Harbor Master and the DPS relative to the taking out the walkover. I don't have that yet, so you'll have it at the next meeting. Rest assured, it'll be in place before. The contractor's still getting his orders taken back. So. But the time frame is May 1st till August. October 1st, and then any time there's a storm, Harbor Master coordinates with DPS, and DPS is the entity that comes out and does it. So the director of public services is responsible for telling whoever he wants on his back to go and lock it down.
But are we going to have any contingency for residents? Maybe a couple of residents out there?
I actually have to talk to the mayor about that. I'm meeting with her next week to talk about a range of things, and that's included. There's been mixed feelings about, you know, who do we rely on to do it. Some folks are out there, some folks aren't. Mixed feelings about, you know, who and how. So I think it's a good idea to at least have it as a backup, because the worst thing they could possibly have is access to a padlock key that would allow them to open up the wish box and in. So it's not really like it's a huge liability on our part to give someone else access. So I'd like to have at least two people on that street have the ability to go in and do it in case.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to talk to them more about that. DPS prefers that as well, just as a back.
Yeah. Well, it could save us a lot of money, too, if they...
Right.
To prevent those bags from getting taken out by
right.
The thing. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening.
Okay. So we got Jim's notes for the DEP site visit to 17 Graff Road. And I don't exactly remember what they were, but...
DEP took some additional plans and information at the meeting. I didn't hear back from them since then, and I haven't had a chance to call them in the last 2 days to follow up and see, you know, what, if anything, has transpired or revealed those plans. But I know they got the updated information. Supposedly, that was supposed to be sufficient to address their concern, but I haven't heard anything in confirmation, so to me, it's still an open issue.
Okay. And the internet just popped on for a second.
But procedurally, they supposedly released their appeal, or they backed off from their appeal, or not?
Released their appeal on Hale Street. This one, the 17 Graff Road, they had a concern regarding.
Oh, so this is still under superseding process.
Well, they technically it was a letter. It was I forget the exact terminology they used, but it wasn't actually a superseding order. It was basically they're checking something out, and if they find out that there's actually a legitimate documented concern that they could have done something else there to mitigate or minimize the impacts, then they will step in with a superseding order and take over. They haven't done that yet because they weren't convinced. They felt it might be just missing plans and information they needed. So because they had gotten the revised set of plans from the applicant when it was approved by the commission, they said, let us take a look at those plans and verify. So if they, in fact, come back and say that the plans are acceptable and address our concern that it's the best they could possibly do, then they'll drop it and there's nothing to act on. If they feel that there's still something more that the applicant could have done to minimize impacts, then they'll actually issue a superseding order for it.
It was an intervention.
Intervention. So.
Okay. Next, the Virginia Lane Swale Restoration.
I know that you had some discussion about the last meeting, but just to give you kind of a background, I don't know what, if anything, was discussed at the last meeting in great detail, but sort of up to date. But I got the sense that some of you knew the issue that went on over there previously. This is a plan in that area. And I wasn't here for the early part of this dialogue, but I heard this issue from the, I guess I would say the former planning director, and then Mary had taken a little bit of a look at this issue early on, but it didn't get too far. What's happened here is this plan right here, and there's a lot more sort of background, like I said, but just in real simple terms. This is Virginia Lane right here. This is Storybrooke Road. There's drainage coming from this area. It comes down Virginia Lane here, and a drain, sort of drain manholes and pipes that lead up to here. There's also another pipe that comes this way. It ends up going through a swale that's between these two. There's two properties here and two properties here. This is a paper street through here. So the drainage at that time was designed to go in a swale through that paper street. It's not entirely clear to me. I haven't spent the days and months that it would take to research all the files and find out exactly what went wrong during that subdivision. But clearly it was built in a way that we wouldn't approve today, if we were going to build something out of it. The drainage swale was put through this. The road was never built, obviously, in this area. Water was basically conveyed through here and then through another space between these two lots on the other side of the street, which are not shown. And what's happened here over the years is, I guess, these residents here in the Hunters have had some problems with drainage where the water has come through these pipes. It's been blocked up because of a culvert that's basically been filled with sediment, and the swale has been filled with vegetation and sediment over the years. And they've complained to the city, to the mayor in particular, to the former mayor, to multiple former Holiday, that they've been getting flooding issues through their driveway, which is located right here, and into the garage of their house. So since I've been here over a year now, they've had some back and forth over the issue. I stepped, you know, the mayor asked for my feedback, and I told him that, you know, I do think that there's some responsibility on the part of the city to do the drainage issue, but at the same time, they didn't build the house the way that they were supposed to. So if you go back and look at the record, you find that they were supposed to build the house here, and I think the driver was supposed to be going up to the house this way. They basically built it at the lowest point they possibly could have and essentially made it almost the same height as the swale. So, of course, they're going to get water in the basement. And so when we commented back, we explained that to them and their attorney and said, you know, you have to understand that there's some responsibility on their part for, one, not building. They said basically these plans were approved by the commission. And I looked at the record and I said, well, no, they actually weren't approved by the commission. The plans that were approved by the commission would have the driveway here, and that would have left them plenty of room to have some sort of a berm, at least a sloping area down to the swale. They didn't do that. They built the driveway going down right next to the swale, so it seems obvious and you know, no surprise that they're having flooding issues, especially, you know, one thing on their property, but there's no reason why it needs to go on their house. I think that's entirely the builder's fault. And their claim is, well, it doesn't make a difference to us. It's still water from the city. So the problem on the city side is that the city voted in 96 to accept some 40 streets, I think 40-something streets, all at the same time, without a whole lot of research, I imagine, into it, and decided to accept those streets mainly to get this Chapter 90 reimbursement from the state because we get reimbursement for some, you know, sections of road we have. This is not uncommon in Massachusetts. It happens all the time. But because there's a reimbursement process and because there isn't a whole lot of... there's a very poor process the legislature set up for acceptance of roads, but so it's very common this happens. But the city basically accepted a bunch of streets, including this one, so there's some liability on the city's part, however that acceptance is done, for the fact that we now own the drainage issues coming from the roadway. So the fact that this is actually not an area we have a deed for is not entirely relevant. The fact that our water is coming from a road that is accepted by the city is a factor that we need to consider. So the mayor has basically said to the residents, all right, if several things happen, we will do some work in this area to improve the drainage situation, but only contingent on those things. And step in if you have any questions as I'm explaining, because I don't know if they're allowed to. The mayor said, and this is a letter that I had drafted, you know, per the mayor's request, you know, itemizing the things that I think need to be addressed first before we committed ourselves 100% to doing the work. One, that each of the abutters would agree to give us permission to go in there and do the work, because technically we don't actually own this area here. We'd have to get easements, or in this case, potentially a friendly taking of the land. They'd you know, sign a waiver, or we'd take this strip here, an easement through it. To get to take care of this area.
If it's a paper street,
yeah.
If it's a paper street, isn't there already some sort of easement there?
There isn't. So the paper street, if you will, appears from all records, and our council's looked at it further, the registry has done more deep research, but it appears that the paper street is shown as plans, but there's actually no instrument of conveyance, so there's no document that actually says, you know, this is given to the city. So there's no actual documented right on the part of the city, even though it says drainage easement. It doesn't explain is that actually to the city. We assume it's for the city, but there's nothing that actually conveys that right to the city. So that's basically the loose end we have right now. And so I explained that to the mayor, and she agreed that we should have council look into it. And they basically come back and said, yeah, we think we need to get some sort of permission from the abutters to go in there.
Andy, is that going to be limited to just this particular project work, or is that going to be a permanent kind of a easement or license or something?
Right. So the way that we've set it up in this case is, and again, what we want to make sure as much as possible is the city doesn't have to coordinate on a regular basis and do things.
Yeah.
That idea here is the way that the friendly taking would be set up and the conditions that they would be required to adhere to is that the city would take this easement here, do this work once, maintain only the stone swale. I'll explain the work is, but maintain a stone swale through here. I think it's 6 feet wide. Through the bottom of this swale here, which would allow the water to travel through, prevent vegetation from growing up through it because it has a filter fabric underneath it, allow the water to travel through, prevent it from backing up here. The city would only be responsible for maintaining the pipes that are already there, the culvert, which again will be, those will be reconnected and repaired, then maintaining the stone swale through here and up to this culvert. This culvert needs to be reset because it's dropped a bit. It's basically eroded out the bottom, so the flared end has basically fallen out of it, so we're going to reset that. But basically, the city would maintain only the piped and stone channel area. The residents would be responsible for maintaining the vegetated areas per the agreement for us. So the conditions would essentially, if we do this to deal with the drainage issue over there, you're responsible for maintaining the vegetated areas in accordance with our plan. And that basically what that goes down to is...
How about the driveway on the corner lot? Is that going to stay where it is?
This one here?
Yeah.
There's no call-out in our plan to have that change. The residents have pushed back on that sort of issue and said, well, you know, it's not our... They perceive it as really not their responsibility, and I understand that they purchased it from a builder who built it before they got there. But ultimately speaking, that's one of the things that comes when you buy a property is the little things that, you know, have been set up there in advance. So, you know, if I was buying that property, I wouldn't, you know, be surprised about the idea of that. And, you know, immediately question why is this driveway next to the swale? Is that going to be a problem in the future? But, you know, they basically feel like they shouldn't have to modify anything in their car, that the city should be doing this work here. And the city's not going to, as I understand it, going to be going there redesigning the entire lot to, you know, to make those things better. The engineer that did this design basically said the proper way of dealing with this is to have a stone channel going through here that will convey the water through there rather than letting it puddle up here and take out the invasive species that have overgrown this area here to prevent that from becoming essentially a wall. There's so much thick growth in there that it's become a wall essentially to trap sediment in the water. So I don't disagree with you in any way, but that's basically the sort of tug of war that's going on over what should be the city's responsibility.
So in terms of the deal that's on the table now, the residents are going to take care of the invasives and maintain...
Well, the city does the work initially, and then after that...
Oh, the city takes care of the invasives.
Right, the city takes care of the invasives initially, and then after that, they're responsible for invasives. When what you see here is basically the city goes in here, puts the swale in. There is some low vegetation here, but not much. This is the area of thick growth, and there's invasive species growing through here. That would be, this area would be removed of the invasive species entirely, replaced with wetland plantings here and here surrounding the swale. They'd be responsible for maintaining those and then mowing up to that grass area as their front yard shows. But the city would not be responsible for maintaining the growth over here, only the channel through the middle, which is the area that the water would be traveling through. That's basically what's been going back and forth with the residents. And the reason I wanted to bring it to you is to make sure that you're aware of it in advance, because my expectation is that the city would have to file a notice of intent to do this work. And this is assuming that the residents first sign off and say, we'll allow the city to do the work. We're not going to, you know, spend the time and effort of doing the filing. And the third contingency was, so one was the easements or permission from the residents. Two was the permit from the Conservation Commission explained that we need to get that permit first. We can't just go and do the work without getting permission. So this assumes that the commission has looked at this work and is satisfied with what is being done. And the third one was that the city council appropriated the money to do the work to get the contract to go through. So that was conveyed to them in a letter some months ago, and we've gone back and forth with our council on the language of, you know, how the eminent domain, the land would be taken. But the follow-up would be some sort of application with the commission of notice of intent. And I wanted to bring it to your attention in advance, you know, see if you had any prior discussions and thoughts on the issue in general before that is filed. But the intent is basically to return it to its original intent, was to be a conveyance of water. There wasn't a whole lot of detail in the plans, really, about how it was supposed to be designed. This is basically more like what probably would have been designed in the first place if it was done adequately, which is to have a stone around the swale. Or channel at the bottom, and then vegetation around. In this case, they basically just said, let the grass grow, and nobody really maintained it, so it prevented the water from thriving. So
what bothers me about projects like this is nobody's done a hydrogeological study. This could be causing problems down the line.
Right, so essentially, ultimately speaking, the water's going to end up in the same place. What we are proposing is... For whatever reason, when this was designed by the engineering company, Oak Engineers, before I got here, they only took into account the area between this culvert and this culvert here, so the water travels above where it's visible here between the culverts, and then it goes underneath the road again, and then it comes out another culvert here, and there's been erosion down here where the flare head has popped out because it's decided that the water has eroded the material underneath and it's fallen out. So I've said, well, I think we need to address this area too. We can't just, you know, fix this area here because some of that water will continue to flow this way, and potentially if there's a snowline channel here, it may travel a little faster from here to here. So I've assumed that we're going to have to, in our filing, show more of a stone channel at the bottom of that, six-foot wide area going through this channel here, similar nature for, maybe 100 feet somewhere in this area.
What is that area?
So on this side, there's a culvert, and then there's two other residential lots. And then this is actually, this is going back some ways. There's actually state land, I-95 is down here. The water basically dead ends at the end of those lots, just goes out into a treated area where there's not really a whole lot happening. But because they had been, there had actually been a tree that fell down here maybe a month ago due to some erosion, and one of the residents had called me and said, you know, I think the city needs to do something about this. So, you know, essentially what we're trying to do is stabilize this area, keep it from eroding, keep this from backing up, you know, in terms of flooding potential. You know, given the fact that we've inherited these, this, you know, situation, which is not ideal from today's standards, but this is essentially what we have to work with. So.
When those properties built, is like one at the end, for instance?
I think
they were in the 80s sometime.
80s, yeah.
Mid-80s.
Early mid-80s. Mm-hmm. There's not, I mean, the plans back then, the planning board's plans didn't have a whole lot of stormwater review and things like that. They just weren't, you know, as standardized as they are today. There weren't, the plans don't show a whole lot in terms of details of what was done here, or why it was done that way. It doesn't really show anything about why this wasn't done as a stabilized channel. One of the complaints that was made was that this wasn't originally intended to convey some water further up the road, and now it does that, and that's why part of the reason why there's more water coming through here. And, you know, you know, there is more water coming through there, but we are where we are, right? So, and so we have to kind of deal with it as it is today, as opposed to...
So in the city's planning process, which is happening now, are you collecting the feelings of the commission?
Right, well, yeah.
One,
letting you know as a heads
yeah.
up, and two, trying to collect some feedback so that we can make sure that we're addressing the concerns as best as possible because, you know, we recognize that there are some vegetation in the area, it's a resource area, that's exactly why we're filing, but at the same time, this was meant to convey water, and this area is essentially still an invasive species, so there are some benefits to taking off the invasives, for instance, but, so one, I want to make sure you're aware of it in advance, and it's better, you know, that way always, and two, you know, if you have any thoughts on, you know, the concerns about this or nature about this, I want to make sure that we...
Yeah, I think the concern I would have would be that we understand and agree with what the limits of the project would be before you go out and get easements or
right.
design a taking or licenses or whatever it is you're going to collect from the homeowners.
Right.
Because if we come back then and say, oh, really, you ought to be addressing something a little farther away, or
right.
then...
Right.
You know, it's back to square one as far as the negotiations with the homeowners.
Right.
That downstream is integral. That downstream.
Well, I mean, you know, where is this? It ends up on 95. Is that what happens to
it?
95
is pretty far back. Basically, there's another lot that goes until about here, and
hey,
then there's
like mute.
No, this ends up in the industrial park. That's where it ends up.
Ultimately, yeah. Ultimately, if you guys have really extended, basically, there's a wooded area that goes to maybe here, and then there's. The slope, you know, the sits of the grass area slope up to where the highway is. So, you know, there's some distance between there, but basically the water comes through here, and the erosion's been gapping up around the culvert where the water's rushing out. It's sort of erode the bottom. That's not significant, but it's enough that, you know, one or two trees that have grown in there, there's one that was cut down recently by DPW because it had fallen over towards the house, and the other one is leaning right now. I mean, if you go out there, you can see another tree leaning. So these residents are concerned that those trees are going to fall in their houses, at least closer to them.
I don't know. I think it might be useful to do a site visit. I don't know whether.
Yeah, I think we.
Before this gets cast in stone.
Sure. Yeah, if you want to do it before the next conservation meeting, if those signs work, if they don't work, we can do it. But I can show you.
What's the project timetable here? Do you want? Is this something the city might do before the snow flies? Or?
No. I told the mayor and I told the residents that, you know, given all the stuff that need to happen, I don't want it to happen in the spring. They're aware that they want it to happen as soon as possible. They've complained, you know, frequently that it's not being done fast enough. But there are steps that have to be taken. One, we have to make sure we have the legal right to run there. Two, we have to make sure we've got the permits in place to do the work. And three, we've got to make sure we have the money to pay the contractor to do the work. So I told them basically it wouldn't happen until the spring, but we're trying to line up, you know, now the rights of access to go in there and the funding,
and the permitting, so that in the spring it's something we can go out there and do without it. You know,
and will the downstream work be added to this as part of the same project?
Right, so for whatever reason, I don't know, because I wasn't here when Oak was doing this, and they don't actually exist in the form that they did originally as a firm, so I don't know exactly why all this was done this way and didn't include down here, because I mean, when you're first
read, there's going to need to be more permissions or easements or whatnot over there.
Well, I've actually approached these two residents already, so I have to talk to them again about the actual signatures for the waivers, for instance, if we're going to take the easement. But you know, essentially, these two are involved in discussions, and these four are. These are the ones that have had the concerns and the complaints about the flooding issues. None of these have actually had any problems at all. There isn't any erosion in these areas either. But there's a good amount of, you know, invasive species brought up in here that have filled it out, so I don't think there would have any erosion issues. And then in this area here, there's been some erosion that's happened, but these two residents, I don't think otherwise would really pay attention too much to this area. It's just a, you know, vegetating area that to be in otherwise. So basically, each of them has been approached. We do a follow-up with them, hoping that they, you know, grant permission to do the work. We have to follow up with the commission to do the filing, and then to follow up with the city council regarding the funding. And I've said basically, you know, I can see this being done, but those are the steps that need to happen for it to take place. You know, we're trying to address the issue as soon as possible, but it's not going to happen until spring, given the issues that need to be taking place. The mayor will deal with the council on the funding issue. My responsibility is the, you know, the filing with the Conservation Commission, having this revised to show this area here, of course, based on the plans originally designed, and then the permission from the residents. So.
Do we know if the rest of the buildings were built according to
I haven't checked each of these properties. I know that this one didn't match the original plans. The commission's plans showed the driveway, like I said, here.
Right, yeah.
They went, you know, a couple of weeks, from my recollection, they went a couple of weeks later to the building commissioner and showed up only when the driveway was here. And it's not really, you know, explained as to why.
Now, do we know if the swale was built according to the plan?
For the limited detail the plan shows, it does appear to be built correctly. So, I mean, all I'd like to say about it being different than today's standard is just that we would have required a lot more detail. Yeah, from what the plans were supposed to show back then, it's according to plan. Yeah. And it wasn't intended to convey one, there's no doubt about that. It's just, it's not functioning the way it was supposed to.
Right, it wasn't maintained.
You know, it wasn't meant to be overgrown with vegetation, essentially.
Okay. Well,
so I'm a bit of the deal or I don't know if you have any other concerns I'm going to bring back to me designers might be revising these plans to
Other than the increase in velocity out of that
right.
area.
Which is why there needs to be riprap at the other end of the culvert there and there isn't right now. That's right. The amount of water is not changing, it's just the speed. So they need to have a stone lined and where that flare end comes out the other end of the culvert, they need to basically have a riprap and then a stone line channel at the end to dissipate that velocity.
Well, actually, the amount's going to be more because a lot of water was going into this guy's cellar and it was getting drained off. So it's going to increase the amount of water coming
well,
out.
Well, he basically has been piping it back into the.
But he's been doing a detention basin basically, which
true.
Which
he's
won't be there anymore.
Yeah, we won't be able to use the garage as a.
Well, we could call his basement a resource area.
Well,
careful of that. That could get a bit dicey.
All right, let's go on to.
I'm going to refuse myself from that discussion.
From this discussion?
Oh, no.
What?
Is it?
This NOI and this.
Okay.
Okay. Warren Russo is taken care of. Let's do Norman Day, DLI LLC, Two Carry Way, request for certificate of compliance. Thank you.
sounds like in general you're doing some follow up on the fire permits and things, because I know we've spoken to previously about a meeting with our people.
Right.
I can hold this up
a little
bit. It's
the addition
to
the. Is on the end of the building right here. We didn't change anything as far as we actually reduced the amount of pavement which was into here and the building came on. So we reduced the pavement because now we had roof surface, so it equaled out. And the drainage is still basically running off in the same direction. Everything is coming in the same areas right now. This is all grass again. And drain swale behind the building. Any questions? I guess.
And it was all built just like it was all built just like you said it was going to be.
There was nothing. Yeah, it's built is just like the original plan. Nothing changed. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, Donald and Joyce Marchand. 1367th Street, request for a certificate. Do we get anything on that?
This might have been a while back and we sent something around. It's been a couple of weeks on this one.
Show that we wanted to do a site visit on this.
Which one? Yeah. Well, you said, well, Andy wasn't here, none of us seen it, so we deferred it to the same thing now to see it.
Yeah, this, I only have my copy right now. I think I might have emailed this, I'm not sure for this time, but this is the plan if you want to pass it around to the road. I wasn't here when this one was originally.
Oh, this was the one that was originally going to be an entirely decked in backyard.
Right, and you had mentioned that during your last meeting.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
The.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was why we were a little cherry on
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Down
the reservation terrace?
Yeah, I live on the same street, and quite frankly, when they have a fairly large for Plum Island, an open lot still.
Yeah.
The only place that they could even possibly consider putting this total deck is on top of the beach front. There's no place else. It's in the house. They've got huge outside decks on the house now. I don't know why they want a flat deck in the backyard. I really can't imagine it, but I know.
Well, they had originally, their original plan was pretty much the whole backyard was decked. And
it was a series of walkways too, so that they could empty
there were, yeah, there was that too. But
they've got a shed out there, and they have a walkway that goes when you come down near the back stairs on the driveway side, where they have two levels of decks. They walk out, and there's an outside shower area. Then there's a deck that goes around the house going towards the reservation, and that dead ends on the side of the house. Again, what the purpose of that is, I don't have a clue, but
well, I just remember there was a fair bit of back and forth, and, you know, I don't want to say it's contentious, but, I mean, there was pushback, you know, because this got permitted, so I just want to make sure that it got built according to what we permitted.
The project with Javier Hill, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Wasn't one of the residents
a
wheelchair?
Or? No.
I haven't had a chance to take a look at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The resident claim that's what you're saying on the plans there is exactly what has been built. I have not been able to go out there and look at myself.
Yeah, so we should probably
take a look at that.
Now, does that as-built plan look like the original?
This is
that is the original.
There is
plan.
No as-built plan.
Oh, there is
yeah,
no.
They're
oh.
saying we build
oh.
that.
Oh, okay,
right.
So we have one.
And she acknowledged when she came in that this was less than what she had wanted, or they had wanted originally. They came in. But,
I remember that.
This is pretty much what it looks like, although I don't think that these nine beach points that are shown on the plan, they don't exist.
No.
Because
we do have some.
Yeah, there was a
vegetation
discussion. And I thought there might have been some beach grass that was supposed to be planted too, but I don't know where all that went.
Well, until something goes out in September.
Yeah.
So, motion to continue again?
Oh, second.
Till the next meeting? Do we. To
yes.
What is it? The
18th? I assume some will be able to go out here by the
18th. October 18th.
Yeah. Maybe that's something Jim could do if you would. I don't know. Is that
yeah, we can. No.
It might be better if someone who is.
Yeah.
I don't know the owners. You know, they have people, I believe, that they're from Switzerland. I don't know if I've ever met them.
Yeah,
they're
always
overseas. There are a lot of different people that kind of move in and out, their relatives or friends, or I don't know who they are over the course of the summer. It has some places virtually shut down all winter, but I wouldn't know the owners if they were sitting right here.
Okay, well, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Andy, would you be able to see if you can get a hold of Javier or whoever it is? And,
yeah.
And so we can schedule a,
okay.
Send around an email and we'll schedule something.
And you might want to dig up the notes about the, you know, negotiating of the vegetation,
mm-hmm.
landscaping. I think that was a pretty big part of the
yeah.
project.
I don't know who might have the notes.
Any preferences to time? Anybody want to go out there? So I can.
It's dark early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. But I don't know. I can be here at 5, so.
Okay. No earlier than 5, then basically.
Yeah. Point.
And one way around the side that you were talking about, that dead end, that's,
yeah,
that's supposed to be a roll up. That's that was access to the AC units.
Okay, it's not. It's you know, it's a four. It's a full wooden deck. It's not a roll up deck.
I see. Yeah, it's flexible. Maybe not roll up. It's a flexible.
Flexible plant and wire walkway. That implies a roll up.
Yes,
it's not.
We need to realize and go check that.
Yeah.
So you think it's not removable?
I don't believe it. I haven't walked on it, but I don't believe it is.
Okie dokie. So that one's the one quail run that we just got tonight, I am recusing myself since that's right behind my house. So, Steve, discuss this in that way.
No, I thought we were running out of reporters. It doesn't look like our applicant is here. Yeah, so I've been out to this site. So the Beaver Dam was removed several months ago at this point. The Board of Health agent issued an emergency permit for them to do that. They removed the Beaver Dam. This area, as you can see in the photograph, which I think, I'm not sure if it appears as a color or not, but the area there floods. I've been out there before. This area floods, I don't know how frequently, but they say on a regular basis, and I have reason to believe that's true because I've seen photographs of different people, but sometimes I guess it flows over the road there. At any rate, this is the house here, this is the backyard, and what the applicant wants to do is basically redo this lawn area. Originally, I think he wanted to add a good amount of fill in there, and I explained to him that that was probably not likely to be approved, but you know, he's welcome to apply, but he's probably not likely to be approved without anything about fill. He's now proposing to do 40 to 50 yards of clean, fresh loam and 4 to 5 inches deep with hydro seed. So he basically wants to redo his lawn, try to keep it from being as flooded, but basically just regress. So the question, I think, is less the hydro seed than it is doing the loam.
So this picture, Andy, would be where these...
that's where he's proposing.
Grid is, that would be the sort of loam and hydro seed.
Right, so the... this, you can see kind of the patched area here. This is the area he's concerned about. You can see almost like you can see a line there. This line right here is basically the extent of what he's concerned about, up to essentially the wetland edge there. So that is what he is proposing to do, is basically add some loam there and reseed that as grass. You know, whether or not it's more appropriate for maybe wetland vegetation and so forth. It does seem to flood on a regular basis, but they've also claimed that that's because of the beavers. You know, I don't know what will happen with the It seems like it's going to continue to flood probably, but I don't know how much will have to be there. So.
I'm going to unrecuse myself because they're over 300 feet away from my property. So,
so you're back in charge?
I'm back in charge.
Boy,
we are.
Wait a minute. What just happened?
No, I thought it was on the other side of the road. It's the corner lot here on the top lot there, right?
Yeah.
So they're
it's over here.
They're over 300 feet from my house.
So their description of the work includes 40 to 50 yards. So I would say that at this point I'd like to motion that this is a positive determination.
Yeah, that property has been flooding ever since I've been there.
It looks like wetlands.
There was a good amount of yard even between the area that floods. I mean, I would say relatively speaking, a good amount of yard between the area that floods and the area that they have the house. So there is some yard area that isn't being flooded.
Doesn't appear
as
though that's where they want to put the lawn, though. They want to put it where the flood. So anyway,
it would elevate that area.
Mm-hmm. Right, which just pushes the water somewhere else.
And nothing's
going to
stop the beavers from coming back.
Oh, yeah, and they're aware of that. They've been told, basically, this is not, I mean, you're not going to have another beaver next week. but, yeah, I mean, essentially, this goes back to the values protected by the Act. You know, it's flood control is one of them.
Yeah.
I'm doing well with it.
It's nothing new. I have pictures of that backyard in 96, completely full of water. The beaver's got nothing to do with not much to do with that. Doe Run's got a lot more to do with the flooding back there than the beaver does.
Would you like to make a note of the positive determination that the flood control is one of the issues that displacement sort of thing is relevant? Just the fact
sure.
that displacement of flood control, you know, values protected by the Act. You know, if they were to get a negative determination and fill this in, it would present a problem.
In this building, it's really in the buffer area.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, I would say it's too much to be done.
Yep.
Well, it is. I mean,
I'm not sure it is in the resource area.
Oh, it's the resource area there.
By their own description, it's constantly wet. So.
Right. If they got a delineation out there, that would be all wetlands.
And I don't know how long they've been mowing that area, how deep they've been doing it, because it is a pretty deep yard. I don't know how long it's been mowed that deep. It could have been wetland vegetation much closer to the house at some point.
Right.
So we have a positive determination motion?
We do.
We have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Can I say one more thing on that? Is it possible to go further and suggest to them that if they find the yard to look nicer, that
Yeah.
I mean, they might be thinking, oh, it's an eyesore. It doesn't look much like they use it anyhow.
Yeah, I did have that conversation with them about adding the fill and about the vegetation. That even if they were to do something like that, they would probably still end up being in the same situation, just, you know, delaying the inevitable, which is more flooding, and the grass is not going to survive there because of too much flooding. Or, you know, so.
Well, the direct neighbors are going to get flooded. The people behind them are going to get flooded.
Right, well, and I also explained to them, I said, you have to understand the commission, where they're coming from. If you get permission to do this, every other resident down that stretch, because it goes back pretty far, is going to want to do the same thing, and essentially pushing that into essentially a channel.
Well, we should encourage them to do a to create a wetland.
Right. Well, it would actually help them if they had a, you know, more of an area for them to stay in.
And mm-hmm. that would be a neat precedent.
Get to know the beavers.
I don't know if that's our place.
I can suggest that that was something that might actually help them while still complying with the Act and making it easier for them to get approval for it. And it's up to them at that point.
Because I think their motivation might be aesthetic.
Yeah. I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not the dog. I mean,
yeah,
the dog
I mean,
would stay out if it was a wetland and they enhanced it.
Yeah. The yard is pretty deep, I think. So.
Yeah.
I don't know that they need this area. They still have a pretty good upland.
Okay. All right. So that one's done, and now we're back to the other business and the wetlands ordinance.
Can I just? I just want to mention one thing before the wetlands ordinance,
mm-hmm.
and that is there's a zoning change that I would expect to come before the city council at the next council meeting. Be referred to their subcommittee planning and development and sent to the planning board for an opinion before they act on it, but still a zoning change to come to the planning board to the city council. It's relatively minor as a zoning change issue from the Conservation Commission's point of view, but there's a benefit, a side benefit, let's say, of the developer doing what they're proposing to do. So I was going to explain that just briefly to give you kind of a heads up about it, if you want to you know, express any concerns or questions. More support for it as it gets to the council. I've actually talked to the planning board about it before now, but this plan here is, and I'm going to ask is, I was thinking about the future, maybe bringing my laptop with projectors in case it becomes at all helpful for things like this to show you or to zoom in and out the way that Joe has the GIS, or you can do it, but to zoom in and out and show you a little better where the context is. But this is. Story Avenue is right here. This is I 95. And the Dunkin' Donuts is right here. So, if you're not familiar with that area, so Story Avenue. This is that shopping plaza. This is there's the elderly care facility here. Two residential lots, and there's a gas station right here at the corner.
Is this the CVS?
It's the CVS, right? So they pull it for CVS?
Yeah.
So I don't know to what extent you've heard it before. I think I mentioned it once. But what they're proposing to do, in essence, is this area here is all zoned where they want it to be. It's got a business zone here, residential zone down here. You can see the gray line right here. What they're proposing to do is ask the city council to rezone these two residential lots. You can make on one here and one here. As an extension of that business district to make it possible for them to use this for the CVS. They haven't configured this entirely, but they're assuming a CVS and potentially maybe a smaller use of a bank, drive-through, something like that here. They haven't got a definitive plan yet, but this was a concept presented to the planning board to get a sense of what their concerns and thoughts were. The planning board has no problem with the zoning change, has explained to them that traffic and circulation might be an issue for them as they come in for the permits. That they need to demonstrate that, well, originally proposed to have two accesses off Story Avenue, and the office and the board followed up and saying, no, we're not going to allow that because too much traffic, you know, safety concerns there, and two, you're only going to be able to get a right turn in, right turn out, based on both the city and Mass Highway's concerns. So basically they came back with a revised concept to the planning board and said, all right, we'll have a right turn in, right turn out only. So for this traffic safety on Story Avenue, but they said that we need to have a secondary access, and so they said, well, we'll try to work on something on Lode Street. So they're trying to get an access somewhere here, probably, you know, through one of these properties here, and they need to have access, but that has not been definitively worked out yet. So
Their proposal at this point is to change the zoning, which from a planning point of view is not a problem. It makes sense that on Story Avenue something would be business zone near the highway. But the part that really has more to do with conservation is, you know, the assumption is they're going to have access through here, far enough away from the wetlands that are back here. These are estimated boundaries, but that's not going to be an issue at all. But the issue would be that further back from here, they would propose to keep this piece right here on the business zone land. And the reason they do that is because they need upland area to calculate, because this is all going to be covered basically, like the CVS, the parking, and so forth. So they need that for coverage calculations of the zoning. But
would they put a conservation restriction on it?
What's that?
Would they put a CR on it?
I don't think they'd have any problem with a CR on this. They are proposing to give us 26 acres of land back here.
Right.
And I don't see any reason why, as long as they can calculate under zoning, why they'd have any problem giving us that as a CR. They really couldn't be able to use under zoning. They basically wouldn't be able to use it anyway because they need that for the calculations. So we could, I could double that a little further with them. They're already proposing to give us, which you can't say anything because it's a much bigger piece going that way. I think I have a lot.
If you want to see it, I also have it up on here. But it's a whole area that they were
that's the area
place we walked through. It's all wet back there, really. It's the headwaters of the little river, and they're farming back there. Once they stop farming, what's going to happen? You know, the idea has been brought up. Maybe we can have them put a wetland seed mix back in there. But you know, they're talking about the possibility of a trail. Whatever.
Well,
they're trying to sell.
Maybe if the development constraints are that bad, maybe we don't need a CR.
Oh yeah, they can't build anything back there.
But whether they keep it or don't keep it doesn't much matter.
Yeah, and they want to give public access to a trail system if they can, but just to make us feel better.
It's similar to San Antonio, where this is the area they want to use for the sea.
Yeah, this will be crazy, but if you see the wetlands as the DEP has them right now, they're only split back there by the plowed field. Once they don't plow that field anymore, it's all going to fill. It's all going to be wetlands there.
I guess in my mind, maybe the value of the CR might be that it would prevent them or somebody else in the future from saying, let's figure the access around it and put a driveway back in.
Right.
The Story Avenue and the Low Street thing isn't working out quite the way you thought.
And there's been some dialogue about, which I have not been party to myself, but Joe, you might know this conversation with Conservation Open Space folks about having a trail access or a trailhead there at the back of the CVS parking lot.
Yeah.
So there's a few spaces for parking, an area to go in there, and they said that they would put some sort of a bench, like an adventure or something. They do something like that to make it more of a destination or a trailhead, if you will. During that site plan approval process, the planning board, they said, you know, if we give you this open space, we'll give you an access that's reasonable to get people to the trail. I have heard some interest in the city council. At least one of the members interested in potentially having, you know, city ball fields there if it was possible. I don't think it's going to be possible. I haven't walked in the back of it, but it doesn't look to me on first blush that it's possible.
No, you just need to look at the wetlands. This is all going to be wetlands.
Right.
It is all wetlands.
Right.
It's all filled in. There won't be ball fields. There won't be anything back.
I offered to walk with him anyway, but I told him on first glance it didn't look like he was going to be able to do what he wanted to do. They proposed it as open space to the city, and I assume that I believe there's a lot of support for that. In some of the Olio, you get the open space in the back, it's a good amount of open space. We know what happens with your future, it's all preserved. It's a good thing. So, I think you're right, the fields are not going to be possible. I think from both avenues, it's a good thing. The city gets the right zoning off of Story Avenue business. Where it should be, close to the highway, and the open space gets preserved for back, so we don't have to worry about what happens with that in the future.
To me, in a way, it's kind of a crazy project.
They say they can make it work.
Do they have tenants? I mean, this is small for a CVS.
Well, the folks that are interested in that have this agreement, they basically do this thing in general where they buy the land and they work with CVS. They basically go ahead of CVS,
get the land that they want, the area that they want, and then go back to CBS and say, you know, we've got what you wanted. You know, now you have to make a deal with us because we have the exact parcel you want and the exact area you want. So, I don't know exactly how that dynamic works, but basically, I don't really care.
But if you pay any attention to what CBS is doing on sites now, they're building bigger stores. They're not. This is a tight site, really.
They're going to have the two residential properties adjacent to it. I mean, they're going to be able to make
parking.
It
as
you can see, the whole
and
thing.
Frankly,
is
getting in and out of it from Story Avenue,
that's what the Shell station on the corner.
Yeah,
You can't even get into that sometimes.
They just probably spent $250,000. They had to replace all of their underground tanks.
Well, that CBS.
That's a very expensive process.
They're not taking that out.
No, they want to keep the gas.
Wrap around the gas.
But that question came up, but then we did ask them, said, you know, what about visibility? Because you're not really going to have any good visibility from the east side of Story Avenue to come down. They said, well, we don't think it's going to be an issue. So whatever it is, whatever dynamic goes on there, they seem to think they're pretty confident that they can make that work.
But you wouldn't be able to make, going west on Story Avenue, you couldn't turn into it.
No.
If you run west, no. No, you'd have to go on the low street and then turn right into the drive.
The drive that they don't have yet.
But they claim that they're working on. They're dealing with each of the property owners, those three, let's say, in that area, and they have yet to tell us where they're going to have that.
And even going down Low Street, there's a little strip mall with B&G Cabinets and Giovelli's, the Italian restaurant. You're going to have to go down the way to go past those.
There's that doctor's office there now.
Right.
That's what they're talking about for the access.
That's where the access would be. Yeah.
Have you seen people trying to make a left-hand turn out of that?
Well, right. I understand. So
the traffic control is terrible.
We've explained to them that they have all things that we would be concerned about. They may not necessarily get approved the way that they think they're going to come in with. But, you know, the question at this point is the zoning right? And from a planning point of view, I have no objection to business zoning on Story Avenue. If this deal falls out and they don't get to do it, we're back to square one, which is the exact same situation we have today. But if it works out and they get the zoning change and they're able to build something there with planning approval, then we get a lot of open space in the back. So there's pros and cons, you know, of course. But
I think these are the only residences between the Shell station and 95.
And the highway, right, there are. Yeah.
It amazes me that CBS is building another one in Kingsbury, like 3/10 of a mile down the road from already CBS.
The new one that is open.
Well, look at Dunkin' Donuts. There's, what, four in town?
Yeah, but that's called.
That's different. That's
a legal drug.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good luck to them.
I don't see the access
to it. We've already talked to them about that. We've kind of beat that also. So, I mean, until they come back to us with more of a solution as to how they're getting out to Low Street and how much queuing you're going to get, that kind of thing.
Has the planning board got into the access and the traffic issues yet?
Planning board's had an informal discussion with them, and they basically said, we have no problem with the zoning change. We think that it probably aren't as a use as long as we do all the site plan issues, the building is a decent-looking building, that kind of thing. But they acknowledged when they said, you know, access on Low Street and the queuing area there is our concern. If you can show that will work somehow, you can make that work, then, you know, you don't have any problem. But that's the issue. That's the concern of ours. So, I think everything else being equal, that's the issue.
I mean, access on Story Avenue is not great either. I mean, if there's a lot of traffic and a red light, you can't even get into the Shell station.
Well, that's why it's only going to be a right in, right out. So,
but you can't do a right in if there's a line of cars in front of you. Mm-hmm. You have to wait for two light cycles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so they'll have to do what I've seen them do in Long Island, where they have five lanes going in each direction. That's how they solve those problems.
Mm. Like a bar,
it's
yeah.
Like it's really dangerous.
But if you guys have any suggestions on the open space parcel, what you'd like to see done, you know, we've discussed or thrown around stuff like boardwalks or whatever for a trail system back there. You know?
Well, I think with public access, it would be a start on what they're going to retain back there.
Well, we're going to have any kind of a trail system, there's going to have to be some boardwalks. There's going to have to be something put in there.
So what you're asking is, do we want to propose that they actually spend some money as part of their project on
that? Yeah, to make it, you know, including seeding
the plowed area with wetland mix. Anything, you know.
Is I mean, other than places where you'd have to have the wet crossing, the boardwalk or whatever, is it a good place for a trail system?
See,
okay.
Yeah.
The procedure would be at some point in the future you could somehow connect it to the CR
on the Olio.
And then, you know, a cross crawl lane down through the Olio alone. And you start behind the cell station and walk all the way to Hillside.
Yeah, one issue would be the boardwalk, the other would be the crates and parking.
Yeah, well, they're
trail
offering the park. Parking, but... you'd have to get to Crow Lane. It's very wet back there. And there's... From there, if you wanted to get to...
in order to get off that property, you'd have to cross over some mountains.
And parts of the Little River. That we stepped over when we were going around out there. So,
but if you were to go out there tomorrow after all this rain, it'd be a big boardwalk.
You need a
there's a lot of water out there right now.
Oh.
So, yeah, they're offering things, but I don't know how greatly useful it is. It does directly abut the Olio property. So that's, you know, that would be a big increase in open space out there and habitat. So, but I think the biggest thing would be the wetlands. Get a wetlands mix put out there.
The Olio property about scale.
Right.
If you want to spend money on more lots, you
can get it. Yeah, we probably need that Colby property too. That's,
that would be nice.
Yeah, it would be very nice. So,
all right, well, if you have any thoughts during the council's discussion of that, you know, council seems to be behind it, planning board seems to be behind it, we'll see if, you know, we get to those steps, but I can see the benefits on both sides, even if nothing happens down there, as long as we get the open space, you know. The real benefit is the open space. If we get that open space, great. If I'm a business owner, that story, that would make sense that we get something smaller than that, that doesn't have, a drive through pharmacy, that kind of thing, but, you know, it's a big amount of open space, we can get locked in. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now to the ordinance.
All right, so the ordinance. I understand, I know you've all been waiting a long time for me to put my tweets into it, and I apologize if you said really nice and very well. Lost an hour and so forth. So this is the ordinance. I'll explain what changes have been done.
I think I gave them there.
What was the header for your top of the page? Just a bit of a research. Last time I had talked to you about this, there were a couple of concerns I had, and you're of course welcome to go to the council anytime you want. I just made some suggestions that would make it more palatable to the city council, address some of my concerns because I'm not going to ask for my feedback on it. Not my copy.
What do you mean?
That's it.
You said you had my copy?
Oh no, I just want to make sure I had my copy because I want to be on my own. So a couple of things I was concerned about. There were a couple of things that, and I understand that there's an MACC template, and Mary had obviously spent a lot of time as a big folder. She had had little notes about different ordinances, other places, but I had worked on one in Peabody years ago. It was before the MACC came out with theirs. I still think, generally speaking, it's a pretty good format, although there's some things I would improve on since then. But I endeavored to stick to what you had all talked about previously and felt was working. So I tried to basically pull some things from that ordinance and some other language that I felt would cover issues that I felt like were missing in this draft that you last looked at. I reformatted a bit just to make it look a little prettier and make it easier to follow, in my opinion. But basically, it's the same ordinance with some things added to it. And I'll kind of summarize for you. I've removed the redundancy between the ordinance and the regulations. For instance, the jurisdiction, the purpose, the authority. It's only, I've tried to minimize the redundancy of those things because, you know, we deal with a lot of paperwork around here. I'm trying to keep things simple. So if people are getting copies of the regulations, we have to explain where something is. It's better to have a shorter document. And two, what I found when I looked at the ordinance and the regulations that were drafted previously was that there was a lot of inconsistency. They were a term in one place, different slightly from a term in another place, and there's really no need to do that if you can just have it consolidated in one spot. So, you know, for instance, there was one spot where it said, you know, other cities and towns would be notified if they're within 300 feet of the property, whereas another section said they'd be notified if it was 100 feet of the property. So the ordinance that was drafted, the previous version of the ordinance showed was numbered not in a way that would fit in the city's code, where the regulations were numbered in a way that would fit in the city's code. So it was actually the inverse of what we would expect. So I renumbered the ordinance to match the city's code so it would fit in there. I removed some other conflicting language, where basically found one section that was better written than another, and basically tried to remove that redundancy so that you don't have to worry about as many places where the same thing is called out but in slightly different ways. It's going to prevent us from later on from getting into arguments with people over what a term meant or what it was supposed to say. So there's no perfect formula. I wish the state would come out with a better set of wellness regulations that would replace everything and the way that local communities have tried to do it. But since that's not happening, I do think we need to have a local ordinance. So in essence, what happens here is that the ordinance is intended to give you the authority to do what you need to do without having to go back to city council. That's in essence why you're going to city council. Otherwise, you just adopt the regulations and do your own thing. So what I've tried to do is pull into the ordinance some things that I think need to be covered. Otherwise, there'll be questions about whether you have the authority to do them. So in the previous version, the biggest concern I had was that the previous version of the regulations had the 25-foot no disturb area in it, and the ordinance really didn't specify what that was. I don't think that's going to be acceptable to the council. I think it will lead to questions later on about whether or not the commission is overstepping its bounds by describing a no disturb zone that's 25 feet or 35 feet or whatever. You know, we could debate on that at the end of time.
Where did you put that in?
Where did you put it? Yeah, was it? In the ordinance? I can go kind of section by section if you want.
Yeah, so far what you've described is sort of non-substantive things. But now we're starting
now
to
we're
get
substantive,
so
yeah.
I think.
Let me go section by section, and I'll get to that as we go through, and you'll see. The page one, table of contents, I didn't phone the page numbers. I figured once we take a look and you give me your feedback on this, that we could plug those in. But purpose and authority, that just spells out essentially why we're doing this. Again, this is from essentially the city council's perspective. You know, we're protecting the wetlands. Here's the values we want to protect. There's no reason to reiterate that in the regulations when the regulations can just incorporate everything from the ordinance in it. So I took that out of the regulations. It's just in the ordinance. The regulations just reference the ordinance as covering other things that are missing. So less documentation, less paperwork, and one section that deals with any given issue. You added and modified the language relative to references to the Wetlands Protection Act so that it's clear that we're basically incorporating, unless otherwise specified in here, we're incorporating everything in the Wetlands Protection Act as being the default. So if there's, in case there's something that someone says we're missing, you know, it's in the Wetlands Protection Act. So that's kind of a cover-all. The jurisdiction and regulated activities, instead of leaving that in the regulations, it's in the ordinance. I think that's important because the ordinance is essentially legally, it's giving you the umbrella, the box within which you have authority. So if you leave that in the regulations, I think it's the inverse of what it should be. Legally, the council needs to give you the authority and then define what that box is, and then after that, you can do what you need to do in your regulations without having to go back to that. I don't think it's sound to not have the jurisdiction and the regulated activities in the ordinance. So that, for that reason, I pulled those into the ordinance and took them out of the regulations. The regulations is a small subset of the ordinance that you have control over without having to go back to the council. So So basically that stuff has essentially stayed the same. Special provisions for the Barrier Beach have carried over. The only thing that changed in that was we had this discussion previously about the last provision, number 11 on page 5. If you look at the top part of that page where it says notwithstanding the previous sentence, there was a question here about the way it was phrased. I was concerned that the way it was phrased in the prior version, one could read that if someone was just putting on a new roof, they'd be required to put the entire building on pilings, and that seemed unreasonable. It wasn't what the original ordinance had. So I revised this to say what I think we expected it to say based on our prior discussion, which was that if they're doing this work on, you know, 50% of the exterior walls and they're putting on a new roof, it has to be, or they're putting using exterior walls around that wall, they need to put the building on pilings, but not only if there's a roof being put on. So that was my concern about that provision from last time. There was some question about that. That's the only thing that's changed in the standards for the Barrier Beaches.
That's the way it should be. I missed the punctuation mark.
No, it's okay. I just want to make sure, because I was concerned about the council, you know, for those councils who might actually read the entire thing thoroughly, they might look at it and say, you know, I'm not going to require residents out there to put their building on piling if they're just replacing the roof. You know, I think we got rid of that issue. If you read through this, I think you'll hopefully find that section acceptable now and consistent with what we've previously discussed. And also, of course, because it's consistent with the administrative consent order.
So we can hold our heads up and represent to the council or to anybody that we haven't really changed anything.
On Plum Island, right.
Because that's going to be a hot spot.
Right, exactly.
Just that very minor thing that I wanted in there because of one applicant who built walls around the other walls.
All right.
The old walls.
So the part with the parentheses in here where it says, including but not limited to encasing an existing wall of a new exterior wall, that's the part that was put in just to clarify that it wasn't meant to be an exemption or a loophole that someone could get through. So that's in there, but basically it's essentially the same thing. It just clarifies an issue. The exemptions and exceptions, I think, have been pretty much consolidated into the ordinance here in the section. Emergency projects with permission from the commission at the next regular meeting, that kind of thing. Utility work that's of a public, emergency public service nature. On the next page, page 6, there's variances, hardship, and mitigation. I think in a few instances, I slightly changed the title of sections to sort of what I felt either simplify the title of the section or cover more adequately what was in there. So variances, hardship, and mitigation. So this is the section that talks about where someone wants an exception to provisions in the ordinance or the regulations. They can get your permission to do that, but they need to follow certain standards. So if you look at halfway down the page, you can redo this, of course, and get back here, but halfway down the page, it says that they have to show that there's no reasonable conditions or alternatives they could use to get to their project. Mitigating measures are proposed, basically the impacts they're going to have, and that the project is necessary to accommodate an overriding public interest or is necessary to prevent a taking of the land, essentially a taking of the land constitutionally. So this little tweak we could do from this point, but my goal was to make sure that enough was in the ordinance, covering the bigger issues in the ordinance, that we could represent to the council that we've got the authority we need, and the rest of it can be dealt with through the regulations. That was my concern, essentially, originally with the draft.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Regarding the reasons that we can waive performance standard, would that, in referencing back to the Plum Island performance standards, such as no development or redevelopment within the view zone, does that mean we can waive that?
Well, technically, under this, you'd have the authority to do it. It wouldn't be advisable.
No.
I wouldn't expect that the commission members would want to do that.
I'm just wondering if at least in Plum Island, now that they're one document,
Right, true. You could put in there, you could say, we could add a sentence saying that no waivers can be granted from that section so that there's clarity that, because that section was essentially developed from the administrative consent order process that you went through, and, to make it clear that you don't have to argue with people that are on explaining why you can't give waivers from them. You could say, in accordance with the ACO, the commission cannot grant waivers from that section, if you're so inclined.
Which is, yeah, I would like to see something in there that says there's no waivers for the Plum Island stuff.
I will put a sentence like that in there, referencing the ACO and the just so that you don't also have to explain, you don't have to continue arguing with people as to whether or not it's your preference to not grant any waivers. It's clear that there's a legal basis for it, which is the fact that the intervention of DEP and all that. So you don't have to sit there and explain to people and explain to the politicians why you're being difficult. You can say,
exactly.
There's a reason for it. We went through this process, and there's volumes of legal papers as to why we got where we are.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Because otherwise people will interpret that and sort of imply there's some sort of, difficulty or unreasonableness from the commission, which is not the case. So. Okay.
In terms of the phrase reasonable conditions or alternatives, one of the concerns I've always had is the cost one. The consultant comes in and says, well, yeah, there are things that can be done, but it will cost way too much.
Right. So Mary had some good language that we've carried over, and I think
somewhere
it's...
Somewhere else?
That is actually in your... we'll get to it when we get to your regulations. There's a section in your regulations that explains...
So that amplifies what reasonable conditions and alternatives are or are not?
Yeah. The language that she had in there talked about... says that... additional, we'll get to it in a second, but additional reasons for denial of a variance, the cumulative alteration of wetlands, subdivision of the land, prior action of the owner, essentially creating their own situation. Alternatives exist, although more costly to the applicant, and resulting in less economic gain, but resulting in no alteration of resource areas. So, it says in here that there's one section that's, I think, a pretty big one that says, for the purpose of this section, conditions or alternatives shall not be considered unreasonable because they are more costly or result in reducing the size of or scope of the project, or result in activities having less visual appeal. It also goes on to say, and I tweaked the language of the sentence that she had, but compliance with the setbacks or other dimensional requirements of local zoning shall not be solely used as a justification for issuance of a variance.
Where
so, I'm sorry?
It's the regulation.
As again, so he'd asked a question about...
Is that in Section 7?
Page 16.
Page 16 of the regulations, yeah.
Okay.
So in the middle there's that paragraph underneath item 1. And at the last part of that sentence, the last part of that paragraph, it says that... because one of the issues that regularly comes up is... someone goes to the planning board, ZBA, and they say, well, the reason I need to come to you, CONCOM, is because I have to adhere to the zoning setbacks. And what you presumably ultimately want to end up with is a situation where the resource area is protected, and maybe they have to get a variance from zoning rather than cutting the wetland.
And it does go on to say, Doug, additional reasons for denial of variance.
So why don't we have something like this in the ordinance?
Now that I've made these changes, so I need to take a little bit through it and take a look at these things myself. I need to look at a section like this. I need to think about whether or not some of these things should be pulled in as well.
I'd start off being fairly negative about doing that. This has to go to the council. Do we really want something that is that detailed in terms of the nuts and bolts of when a variance might be granted and when it wouldn't?
There's pros and cons on both sides.
Yeah, my only question is, would a future commission, if we had something like that, since we're right now not too inclined to give variances, is a future commission just going to come in and get rid of this in the regulations and then start granting variances whenever and wherever?
The future commission can do whatever they want. They can go and get the council to amend the ordinance.
Oh, they can, but that's a lot harder process.
Well,
that's my position on that.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that at least something a bit more definitive about what reasonable conditions
in the ordinance
does mean in the ordinance, because that's kind of a... Well, it's the same kind of issue as the visa. If we don't have something more specific in the ordinance, and then we decide not to give a variance based on our regulation, I can certainly see some people going,
you know, that's good. There's all kinds of things that are going to be in the regulations that are too detailed to be in the ordinance.
Oh, yeah.
You can put it all in the ordinance, Paul.
I know, but this seems like more of a...
No, not to me.
I would prefer to, you know, from my sort of latest writer point of view, I would prefer to consolidate it into the ordinance a little further. But that's just, again, that's on the whole, given the issues and the things that might come up.
I see the conditions and limitations on ordinance, on variances and so on to be stuck with many tweaking by the commission over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to have to go to the council every time we want to tweak it. And that's where we're going to be if we start putting all of that language in the ordinance.
I'm more thinking of this as a backdoor to basically gut the ordinance in the future. Because you could get a commission that's just granting variances all the time. And once they start
granting...
Well, they'd
be violating the regulations.
It just changed the regulations.
Change the regulations.
Just get rid of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
There's pros and cons of both. I mean, if all this language, some of the language to this is put in the ordinance, maybe you have a little more difficulty with the council, maybe there's more of them saying, gee, that sounds really strict to me. And they're not in favor of it up front. But if you get it approved, then you have more consistency along the term.
Yeah, but we also tie our own hands.
This is true.
Right.
And there are going to be projects. There are going to be projects where we say, gee, we really do feel that we would want to give you a variance, but we can't.
Yeah.
You know, we're stuck.
I think
see why we would want to make that decision.
No, putting some of that language into the ordinance so to say we can't give a variance, it just says that just the cost of a different plan does not meet the requirements of a variance.
We can do it, but
yeah.
We'll have that language so we don't have to. And we can hold our ground legally, but it doesn't mean we can't do it.
Artfully written so that it's craftily.
Yeah,
determined.
I know. That's why it's so hard to do these things.
One concern I have, I really do, and the more we put in this ordinance, the more specific, nitty gritty language, the longer the process and the more arduous the process is going to be with the council.
Yeah,
because you know how that works. They're going to, there are people that are going to be questioning everything that's available to be questioned.
Well, I said earlier on this, and I said the same thing to the local historic district folks, that, I think there needs to be some sort of local historic district. Maybe, it needs to be worked out in all the details, but I think there's a big gap without having something there. I think they need to have enough flexibility in the ordinance that it's not going to cause them problems down the road or even with adoption. I think that, there are some that may think that that's going to be strict in every way, and I think that every project, every building is a little different, and if they don't allow them flexibility, one, it's not going to be politically viable, and two, they're going to be causing people all kinds of angst later on when they try to enforce, things, in an absolute way. They need to adapt to each building's a little different, each, architectural feature's a little different. So I think as long as we have a waiver, variant provision in the ordinance that you can then carry out, you can expand on or deal with however you need. As long as you're not going beyond the scope of what's in the ordinance, I think it's good to have something in the ordinance. Maybe we should, talk a little more, you can read this, digest it, and then we can get back about how much language, should be in the ordinance and how much of this should be in the regulations. Because there should be something in there that will give the council a level of comfort, but it'll give the, applicants and those folks that will be coming forward and talking about it all a little comfort. But I think you're right, you don't want to tie your hands later on either. You don't want to, it's one thing to say, well, we have the applicants to be adhering to something, but you also don't want to be tying your own hands because then, you're actually preventing yourself from flexing to, an unusual situation or something that needs an adaptation, and there's no reason to do that. So.
Procedurally, Andy, do you imagine that when this goes before the council, that the council and the committees and whatnot will be looking at the regs and the ordinance side by side?
I mean, effectively, what they're generally concerned about is the ordinance, but they were going to want to see the regs because they want to see, even though basically the ordinance defines the latitude in which you can define those regulations, it kind of, narrows it down to certain things you can address. They're going to want to have some sense as to where you're falling on right now. So they're going to want to see this. It's not the portion that they act on, but if they see something and they say, whoa, that really sticks out as a red flag, They're going to see, essentially what I was saying is they're going to see this anyway. I'm just sort of like,
yeah, I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm just wondering how this is going to work.
They're going to see this. They're going to say, you know, what do the regulations look like? You make reference to the fact that the commission, they don't need to see the regulations up front, but then the first thing they're going to see when they look at section whatever.
They're going to see that there are regulations contemplated.
Yeah. So what do those regulations say? It seems like maybe they can address quite a bit. It says they can address fees. It says they can address performance standards within the buffer areas. It says that they can deal with variances and things. I mean, there's a lot that can be covered in the regs, and I think they will want to see at least what the draft is you're working with. Mm.
Well, they've been told that the regs are going to be there, too. So
right. The
intended regs are going
to
be there. So.
I mean, I would think it would be irresponsible of them not to ask what the regulations look like, given the fact that it gives you latitude to do something without coming back to them. So,
Yeah, it may point out to them something that they hadn't thought of and say, and make them go reread the ordinance to see how that
right.
be.
Right. That's why I would like the no disturb area. I'd rather have it in the, forgetting the legal reasons, I'd rather have it up front to them, what we're talking about, so that they're not saying later on, well, wait a minute, you're trying to sneak through the regs, it's no disturb area, and it's not in the ordinance. Why isn't it in the ordinance? It's done in so many other communities, it shouldn't be any surprise that there is a no disturb area that's being called out. It's probably the key benefit, in my opinion, to having a local ordinance. And state regs don't allow you to do that. So it's the reason, I think, the big reason, other than, verticals and so forth, is to have that. So, if you could add it in as a paragraph and have it where it was just a paragraph, great. But unfortunately, the state's not changing their regs, fast enough, so we have to have local ordinances to cover that. We need to incorporate, by reference, a whole lot of other things just to make sure it's a whole ordinance. Maybe we should... you can take a look at that variance section in both documents, and we can talk a little about what you think should be in there and what shouldn't. I'll try to revise that to consolidate a little more clearly, but I think we have to have something in the ordinance along those lines. And if you have thoughts between now, then you want to follow up, maybe it's confirming again that you want more specificity in there so that there can't be as much flux later on, inconsistencies amongst the commission members or applicants, or maybe if you decide that you want more flexibility, but just let me know. So that's the variances and hardship mitigation section. Then there's the applications and fees. This one I felt was pretty straightforward. There was a question, there was language in the prior version of either the ordinance or the regs, I think, that said the commission may, but it's not required to use the DEP forms for applications. And I couldn't see any reason in my mind why we wouldn't want to just use the same standard forms. You might have some additional checklist you want people to fill out, but you can always put that in your regs. I see no reason to leave it ambiguous as to whether or not we're going to use the state form. Keep it simple, or the paperwork as simple as possible to, make the regulations tougher maybe, but keep the process simple. So it just specifies in here that the form is the same as the DEP. For IDAs and NOIs, which is your big things. It explains that you have to give copies to the city's engineer for looking at stormwater, or the consultant if we happen to require one at that time to look at stormwater. We don't always need one, but if we call it out. Other plan and submission requirements are called out in the regs, so there's no reason to call out those things out in detail here. Those go in the regs. The application and review fees, the filing fees go into the 4453.5 account, so they accumulate from the commission. The advertisement fees are separate. They basically have to pay whatever it costs to advertise in the paper. And the consultant review fees are per Mass General Laws 4453G, and that is to pay the consultants. So there's a separate cost for each of these things. Obviously, we imagine it's one of the things that other people ask about at the time of proposing an ordinance is, look at all these fees, And, I think it bears reminding that some of these things are basically things that are already in place. We're just codifying it, and the only additional fee is essentially the additional, slight additional administrative fee for looking at the local ordinance in addition to the states. But you basically already have state filing fees, you already have local filing fees from that process, you already have advertisement fees, it's the same ad, there's no change in that. The consultant review fees, you're going to require the same amount of consultant review as you do now, really. That's not really changing, so there's really not a huge increase in the fee, Notice to abutters and review and the public hearing as a section that deals with that process.
On the notice to abutters, I was curious when I was looking at the prior language, and it's actually in the Wetlands Protection Act as well. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, in an NOI at least, you're noticing, if you're doing something along the river, you're supposed to notice the Salisbury people on the other side of the river. Does that get done? I haven't frankly paid any attention to those notices. I mean,
it is supposed to happen. I have rarely found it to be done 100%.
That's my eyes.
Yeah, I do remember the Shepherd. He did notify Newberry because it
Parker
was
Ave.
Parker
Street. But I don't think the stuff along the river that I've seen, projects along the Merrimack, I don't think I've seen any Salisbury notifications.
I think they put a notice in the bottle and wouldn't drop it in the water.
I don't know, figuring out ownership over there might be a little hard in some of that. Alright, sorry to distract you.
Yeah, okay. The notice of opportunity to comment by other officials, so that's carried over as well. I was, explaining that there is an avenue for other city officials to comment on it, although they're not binding on the commission. Orders and conditions, the commission can establish permit conditions to make sure that the resource area of value is protected. The no disturbance zones, the presumption of significance of that, that buffer zone, and performance standards for it. So it calls out here that basically the commission can establish some regulations relative to that, but it says that the commission shall require no disturbance zones as follows. And then it calls out the 25-foot no disturbance zone around, if you look at on page 11, those two categories, A and B. And then, and I tried to break it out in here a little more clear, because I think this is something I think calling out the no disturb area, I think is something that has to be in the ordinance. Called up a 25-foot no disturb, and then carried over that language from, I think it was in a different section, about what things are or aren't allowed within the no disturbance zone. So that's your baseline. Now, again, you could grant a variance or a waiver if you felt it was appropriate, given your other requirements, but it's meant to minimize the type of things outside of this box. But we could take a better look at it. But basically, in the 25-foot no disturb zone, there's not a whole lot that we should be able to do.
Yeah, that reminds me of one issue that I had before that actually affects me personally. My house is within like 15 feet of a wetland. Mm-hmm. And
Tear it down.
Tear it down, yeah, I know. Sometimes I want to.
There's an amortization clause in here now.
And there are a lot, well, like that whole development, the whole Doe Run development, a lot of those houses are within 25 feet. Of a wetland.
So you're concerned about grandfathering, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially there is a call out in here, which I think is the same. I just modified some language that Mary had already had in there, I think, either in the ordinance or the regs. It calls out about the fact that things that are already in existence are, obviously don't need to conform with their grandfather, but any extension or change to those things essentially need to be approved. So, your house is up. I mean, if that's your question, the things that are there now can stay. But the things that and the things that have been filed prior to the adoption of this by the City Council are, in the permitting process. But anything after that has to adhere to these new regulations. So a new house being put up would have to adhere to the 25-foot setback. If they were doing an extension of the house, they'd either have to adhere to the 25 feet or get a variance or a waiver from you for doing that.
Okay.
That answers your question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But speaking of the grandfathering type issue. What about, in the industrial park where they built the building, maybe it's 25 feet away from the resource area, but they use that part of the 25-foot strip as emergency access? So they wouldn't have to, be...
Yeah, if it's already being used that way, it could continue to be used that way.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to, say, cut down more vegetation to make a bigger fire access or vehicular access around the back of the building, for deliveries or whatnot, they'd have to come to the commission to get approved.
Right.
So only physically what's there. So for instance, if we were to go over there and photograph, zoom in and take a look, only what's there now is the adoption of that ordinance would be legal.
Yeah.
After that, anything that changes, if we went out there and had to take a photograph and it was different, then that would be a legal one.
Yeah.
Right.
Andy, what is it?
Okay.
No, so maintenance of...
Maintenance of what's already there is legal,
yeah.
Yeah, but changing what's there would not be, yeah.
Andy, one thing on the formatting, I think some work needs to be done on this. Look at pages 10 and 11 and 12, orders and conditions, which is Roman 9.
Okay.
There's a paragraph A, permit conditions, and then there are other paragraph A's further along. So I think, for example...
You mean under in general?
It goes A, B, and then there's an in general with more A's and B's and letters,
right.
And then it goes over to C on the next page.
Mm,
I
yeah.
think you need to...
No, I agree with you entirely. I actually want to redo this entirely because in both the prior versions of this, but also, frankly, in other city ordinances I've seen, there's not enough breakdown of these things in the different sections, so... I did the best I could to try to break it down to be some at least consistent in the numbering sequence, but there are some other sections.
If somebody wanted to refer to
right.
or cite paragraph A under Roman 9, which one of these paragraph A's would it be?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I mean, what they would typically do is they'd have to say, section 9 dot A dot, so they'd have to break it down that way. But, yeah, ideally we'd basically go from letter to number.
I mean, however you want to do it, but I just think it has to be internally consistent.
No, I agree. And frankly, I'd like to add some more bullets, breakdowns in here. So, for instance, if you look at, even on page 10, where you have section A, permit conditions, I'd like to have that be basically A, 1, and 2, so that if someone says, the paragraph there, because then it's
right.
the first
one. Oh, right. Right.
So I'll break it down a little further once we've... You take a look at the language again and let me know if there's any tweakies you want to the language. Then I'll add those numbers in there to be more, more of a breakdown and more consistent. But yeah, it should alternate back and forth. There was some inconsistency in both documents about that. And frankly, not a lot of the city ordinances do it perfectly right now anyway, but we shouldn't follow that model.
Yeah, so we should try and get comments back as soon as possible so we can get this.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get me comments back next week, I can make the change for your next commission meeting, and then you can bring the council up to that, being if you're comfortable with the change that we've done. I'll of course, now I'll take a day off, come back, do it again, and redo it again, and see which things, if anything needs to be done. Because, frankly, there was so much moving things around that had to be done, I think, to make it fit. Just to explain, there's a lot of different things that are going on, but the fact that the numbering sequence of the regulations is the part that would have been in the ordinance, I mean, that took a whole lot of moving things around that, frankly, after you've done that for a lot, you need to kind of step away for a bit and then come back to it. So so I'll be doing another read-through as if I'm, a complete novice and kind of imagine, is there something I'm missing that I'm understanding here? I want to make sure that wherever possible we're using acronyms, but we've defined the acronym before we get there, and frankly, because things have moved around a bit in here, I need to make sure that sequence flows so that somebody who doesn't know anything about laws protection could read through this and, get the sense. So so I'll pay attention to that myself as I do my other read through.
I have a comment on the
film
pool stuff on page 12. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It talks about 200 horizontal linear feet.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is my vernal pool, and I have a slope like this,
mm-hmm.
and here's 200 feet,
horizontal.
So it's 200
right.
horizontal.
Right. So
so
a survey would
from above.
Surveyors would figure that out.
Surveyors got to mark on their plan. They have to verify with their trajectories that that's actually the distance.
So that's some geometry, trigonometry.
That's what arc view is for.
Sine and cosine.
Right.
So in the next sentence, though, we talk about sewage disposal systems, and all we say is 100 feet. Do we need 100 horizontal linear feet?
Yeah, seems reasonable.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody disagrees, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, consistency is like that. And then, there was a consistency in a number of different places. I was spending so much time trying to put things where they belong, I think, to make it acceptable as an ordinance and acceptable as regs. I've tried to clean up some of those things as I went, but there's still some things left. And so I apologize for that, but... I have yet to go do my final review where I'm actually looking at it and saying, okay, now things are where they need to be. Let me read through and see if some of these, you know, housekeeping things are dealt with. So if you find things like that, let me know. I'm happy to make sure those changes are done.
Okay, don't forget to get rid of that one.
Yes, thank you.
Crossed out possible.
Yeah.
Well, looks good. I mean, looks like a...
Yeah, I don't know if you want me to continue to summarize or want to just kind of digest, but probably better if you sort of take it home and read through it. But, the vertebral habitat was the other big difference, which is that we have a huge area around it that's being preserved to protect them, because otherwise you just have, there was one project in Hanover where before it was certified and before the commission had regs, they had a retaining wall that basically went around the vertebral like this, and that's exactly the kind of thing you don't want to have happen. So, that's one of the key benefits of having this local ordinance. But the rest of it's all, I think, pretty straightforward. The only part of the there are some definitions I took from the regs and put in the ordinance because I think they need to be in there. Things like who is actually authorized to be an agent of the commission, I think that needs to be in the ordinance. I don't think you can do that in the regs without making it clear to the council. I think it's better that way. The alteration, what's considered an alteration, and what's the buffer zone, what's an intermittent stream, no disturbance zone. I think that needs to be called in there because they're the type of thing where we could have people coming back and saying, you've stepped beyond your jurisdiction by calling it out that way. So if I issue an enforcement order and someone says, the council never authorized anyone other than the commissioners to issue an enforcement order under this ordinance, at least it's clear that someone appointed by the commission is able to do that. No disturbance zone, I want to make it clear that the council has authorized the creation of no disturbance zone for 45 feet, and then no one comes back and says, well, the commission was authorized to do something, but it wasn't meant to be 25 feet, if we change that to 50 feet, I want to make sure that it's clear that the council authorized 50 feet, so that there's no question about that later on.
Just a question about the agent.
Yep.
It says there, one of the commissioners can be the agent?
Oh, sure.
Right. Yeah, for instance, Joe had issued an enforcement order to the DPS for the sand over the Palm Island. So he's acting as agent in that case. And if I wasn't here, Mary wasn't here, I wasn't here, and no one was in the planning office, you could authorize someone else to be the field fire agent, let's say, to go out there and deal with those enforcement.
Well, I can see that kind of in terms of this implies that a commissioner could be the full-time agent.
No, I'm sorry, that they could what?
Yeah.
Say again?
On page 14?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It says, agent, any conservation commission or city staff appointed agent by the majority of the commission.
Right.
So, if I wanted to be the agent, the commission could appoint an agent. I don't want
if the mayor went
right.
along. If the mayor went along.
Right. And
right.
It says
so
upon a written approval, right? Yeah.
The commission could be the agent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the essence and the reason for that, other, last degree in that sentence, is to make sure that there's some sort of agreement between the commission and the mayor, because the mayor has to deal with the administrative structure of the city, make sure things are working day to day. You're happy that the person who's doing the agent work is doing what you want them to do, issuing enforcement orders, that kind of thing. Clearly, there's been recent, disagreements over that sort of thing, but ultimately, the intent is to make sure that you have a person who's working, hopefully full time, who's working to deal with these things, and the mayor's satisfied they're coming to their job on time, doing the work they need to do during the day-to-day. You're happy with the way that they're reviewing applications, the way that they're issuing enforcement orders, whatever it is. But in the event that there's no one there for some reason, I'm away on vacation, whoever replaces me is on their vacation, there's a gap, let's say there's no one hired for that time, you can hire. You can pick someone on the commission to fill that.
Maybe
role.
Focusing on that issue, Andy, given the requirement of a majority vote and mayoral approval, that wouldn't work all that well in an interim situation, would it?
Yeah, but again...
If you get sick, let's say, and you need to have an alternate agent for a period of time before you come back, you have to have a commission meeting and the mayor approve it.
Well, and just to be clear, because to have your... Because really what it comes down to is yourselves being appointed.
Right.
It says in the enforcement section that either one of you can go out there, including me as the agent, either one of you can go out to a site, issue an enforcement order, as long as it's voted on and backed up at the next Conservation Commission meeting.
So maybe identifying all of an agent really isn't all that important.
Yeah, frankly, the part about the Conservation Commissioners is not really important in this section, because the only thing that's really relevant between your hearings is enforcement. So, and you're already authorized to do that under the enforcement section. So the only thing that's really important here is the city staff or other person being appointed.
And that's the person who has to get approved by the mayor.
Right.
We're
makes sense because
agents.
Right. And the reason for that is really because the mayor has to deal with the contractual things, salary type things, and discipline type things. If there's something that's not being done well enough, like they're not showing up on time, that kind of thing. So, the fact that you guys can go out and do enforcement right now without appointing yourselves, I mean, you can do that as long as it's followed up on the next commission meeting with a vote.
Good question. In other communities that have the local ordinance, is there ever any mention of, say we approve some project and under both the state and the local, and then DEP appeals it?
So it appeals only their decision.
They issue a superseding order.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have to come back to us?
Right. So my preference is always to have one written decision. The portion of their jurisdiction, the DEP, the commission's decision under the Act would be appealed and potentially be overridden, but your local ordinance would still be in place and your decision relative to the local ordinance would still be in place. So let's say DEP comes in and says, superseding order, you've overstepped your bounds, whatever, they do what they want. You still have the complete authority underneath the local ordinance, the home rule.
Right. Yeah,
separate.
No, I'm not thinking to say we approve a project, and there is this 25-foot undisturbed zone. Gets DEP or somebody appeals to DEP, and DEP changes the plan, says, well, it'd be much better if you moved this project 10
right.
feet closer.
So they move things, and they have to come back to you anyway. Even if DEP issues a superseding order, they still have to come back to you because your local ordinance gives you the authority.
Oh, okay, so they do have to
right.
do that.
Right. So even though I think it's preferable from an administrative point of view to have one decision that's issued, they'd still have to come back to you getting a modification to that decision relative to the local ordinance because your local ordinance still gives you the authority to hold them to that plan even if the DEP says they can change it. The DEP would basically say, under the Act, we're issuing a superseding order. The applicant basically is required. They couldn't do any construction without coming back to you and saying, DEP is issuing a superseding order. I recognize this plan has changed. Can you please modify the plan to reflect what DEP is approving? Either you approve that or you don't. Maybe you don't feel comfortable with it and you say no. Or if you do feel comfortable with it, you do. But you still have the authority to hold them to that if you want.
Yeah, and really, our ordinance is more than what the DEP has authority to, so they're not going to be coming
so
out of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's more likely to be the other way around. We deny a permit for some reason, and the applicant tries to get a superseding order, and maybe does from DEP, but he's still stuck with our denial. There's nothing the DEP can really do about that.
I do think it's unfortunate that every community has to go through this process. I mean, it would be ideal if the state would come out with, get rid of all these, every community having a completely different variation of these local ordinances, and just have one state regulation that have no disturbance and so forth. But if it comes up and people say, why can't you just stick with the state regulation? It's important to point out that, if the state just had these couple of extra provisions in there addressed, we wouldn't need this, I think for if there's one template, it would be followed. The rest of it's, pretty self-explanatory. But if you want to, review the ordinance and the regulations, it's basically meant to cover provisions that are not, addressed completely in the ordinance, but doesn't extend beyond the ordinance. So any other definitions that weren't called out because they were sort of really crucial substantive things, all the other definitions are in the regulations.
Roman 11, do we need to say, point out that there are other definitions, other terms are defined in the regulations that aren't defined here?
Let me just check.
I'm not sure it explicitly says that.
Yeah, there is language in the regulations. I don't know if there's an equivalent.
Since you pulled definitions out of the regs and put them in the ordinance, maybe we ought to point
isn't
out.
Isn't that the top? Isn't that the, is that in the first paragraph what you're looking for?
I'm not sure it is.
No, I think you're right. It's missing from the ordinance. What I did was I put into the regulations that section saying that, other definitions are as called for in the ordinance, but I do think
maybe we just need a sentence that says the other terms are defined in the regulations.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, in the ordinance, actually, it says, except as otherwise provided in this ordinance or in the regulations, the definition and terms of the standard should be set forth.
No, that just basically says the Wetlands Protection Act may have other.
Yeah.
How about just repeating what it says in the, what am I looking at?
The
regulations, where it says additional terms are set forth in the regulations.
I think we should just carry that,
that's
we'll carry that sentence over.
Just so people don't think this is an exhaustive list of the definitions.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, frankly, that's I understand that there's a preference to keep something separate. When I first did the ordinance at PV, there wasn't then an ICC model. There was a discussion about having mainly performance standards in regulations. At that time, there wasn't a whole lot of other examples to follow. And my preference in keeping it simple and keeping everything as one clear document was to have everything in one document.
Everything in one place.
So our ordinance covered the performance standards. It covered the notice disturb area. It covered everything in one document. Now there's a preference because you don't want to have, I mean, when you don't want to have to go back to city council and every couple months to change it, you might be tweaked better. Now there's a desire to have two separate documents. The only reason we even knew it was one document was because we were thinking at the time, one document. We weren't thinking about, this is going to have to be changed on a regular basis. We threw in no disturb and so forth. So we weren't expecting significant performance standard changes, at that time.
The stuff that I felt really should be in the regs, and it is, the way you've done it, is, things like, what are the plans supposed to look like?
Right.
Because that can change. And we've gone back and forth on what we might want to see, the plans.
And there may be some, to Joe's point earlier about what's in the ordinance, what's in the reg, there may be some city councilors or other people who are looking at this and are interested who would say, even still, some of the performance standards in the regs should be in the ordinance because they're substantive enough, in my opinion, that they should be in the ordinance. But I basically put in the things that I think are big enough pieces, and the rest of it I think can be kept in the regs. There may be some other people who still feel differently, still feel like there's some more that should be pulled from the regs in the ordinance, but the big thing to me was the sort of no disturb areas. After that, I think everything else is just sort of a minor performance standard that would go under that threshold. All right, so if you want to take a look at it between next meeting, send me your comments, and I'll tweak. I'll obviously make some cleanup things myself, some of the things you call it, and I already have taken. But the sooner you get back, the sooner I can put them up again.
Okay.
I should note that the fees are not in either of these documents. They're called out as a separate schedule, so we can basically have one sheet of paper that has that, and there'll be an updated summary for the council, a couple of important things. Which would be, my preference would be taking, I think Mary had like a two-page thing, and let the standard live down to one page. Sort of a simplified thing that anybody who might be misunderstanding can look at and say, oh, that's the difference between the two, existing and proposed, and keep it kind of real simple for them since they're not necessarily going to need the whole thing and might misunderstand.
Are we going to give the council the copy of the fee schedule too?
Well, it's not necessary. I don't think we should because they're coming to ask.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Mary's draft. It was something at the time wasn't going to go to them. I think they're going to ask.
Yes.
So,
no, I wanted to. It's just making sure.
Yeah.
So we still need to sign one sheet.
Yeah.
And we'll have to make plans for site visits and get this stuff, get your comments back to Andy by next week.
Okay, and just only because not having been here, and I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow when I talk to Diana about whether there's a sort of missing folder, but the signatures, I know from the last meeting you may have done something, but the extension on number one on our agenda.
Warren Russo.
The certificate of compliance for number two, we're going to sign tonight. Is that right?
Yes.
And then the...
didn't we sign that one? 182
So for the last meeting, right? My concern is that if for some reason I go into the office tomorrow, because Diane never mentioned to me the signatures you guys did last time, so my concern is it might have been somehow misplaced in the office before I got back when I was out. So I just want to make sure I don't have to scramble around trying to get signatures again. It'd be easy to just have to sign now.
Yeah, we're all here. So I may as well just re-sign it.
So if we could sign the extension, the certificate of compliance, and the negative determination, or sorry, positive determination of applicability, negative opinion, but positive determination of applicability on the collateral. So this is the extension permit. And the certificate. And the positive determination. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about. No, I'll put you down. The one of the things that's happened, we've got a lot of people interested, like 25 people interested. We've actually had some problems because there's like a bunch of them on the board and committee meeting that night, so we have to move to the library and the children's room, which is a little smaller than the water.
Yikes.
But, so we're trying to find another spot, but every room is being used, you know, the library's main meeting room, so we're trying to move around. We might get back to a different location, but that's great because we had a few people who weren't actually city officials that were interested in that kind of word of mouth, and we want it to be city officials, so it's more of a dialogue about the policymakers of the city as opposed to, you know, just interested folks. Because we're going to do a separate thing with the sort of job. So. Yeah, I'll put you down. Okay.
Was I in that list? Do you remember?
I think you said you wanted to come.
Okay.
Yeah, you're on the list. Thanks.
We have anything else?
Oh, site visits. Do you want to?
Do we want to? You want to schedule now? So we have the one on Plum Island, and what was the other one?
The
Virginia Lane.
Virginia Lane.
Oh yeah, Virginia Lane. Yeah. Which is not here. Docket.
Suggestion? Anybody wants to go have a suggestion? I'm fine next Tuesday night, next Wednesday. We have the climate change thing on Thursday.
Wednesday would work for me next week.
Yeah. Doug?
Well, let's see. What?
Sun goes down around 6:05.
Probably. I can do it. Probably maybe 5:30. It shouldn't take more than a half an hour.
7th Street will only take you 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Out of there.
Well, it's a half hour driving out there,
well,
and driving back.
If the bridge is out, it's
long. Yeah, well, yeah, then it's a lot.
5:30, is that... That
works.
5:30 on the what? The 11th?
Is that the 11th Wednesday?
12th.
Sorry, 12th.
12th?
12th.
So that's Plum Island.
That's 6th, 7th
Street. I may not be able to make it that time, but I'll take a second with myself and let you know when it
okay.
Happens.
It's 5:30.
Are you going to be able to make the other one?
Well, I'll have to be at Virginia Lane just to answer any questions we get about Virginia Lane.
Are we going to do that the same night?
Oh, no, it's going to be a different night. It might as well.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard, isn't it, to do them both?
Oh, okay.
I mean,
all right.
Because of the drive. And
that's
that,
fine.
I don't know. Dark by the time we get to Virginia Lane.
Okay. So that one's a six.
Virginia Lane isn't particularly urgent, right? Because there's a lot of other moving parts to that.
Yeah, there are. But to your point about trying to get some initial feedback, because before we spend time on the agreements and so forth, because
yeah,
we are trying
yeah.
to, you know, based on the mayor's timeline, I'm trying to meet with the residents the next week or so to have them look at the draft, you know, agreement of the taking of the easement to get that ball rolling, because she's essentially committed with the Hunnigans that we would just start that discussion. So, you know, I just don't want to get too far, of course, with that, and then find out that Commission has serious issues, but I mean, frankly, to me, it's pretty straightforward. The resource area gets preserved, except for that thin strip in the middle where the channel is being preserved. The rest of it becomes well in vegetation you do want, instead of invasives you don't want. So I don't really see it as a downside from the Commission's point of view, but I'd prefer to have, you know, feedback before having people sign off on the agreements, et cetera.
So what other, another night?
Well, Monday's a holiday, right? Thursday's not good for you.
Yeah, well, actually before, there's a, this thing doesn't start until 6, so maybe we could do 5:30 or whatever.
Monday's 5:30 on Thursday, yes.
Can
would you be
no.
before the climate change thing?
Yeah. Would you be able to do that?
Is that enough time?
I'm wondering if only so I can get back, because I'm going to need to coordinate with that. It's primarily being driven, run by the folks from IT, but I want to need to make sure that I'm back here as well, so because we are going to do part of it together. So if we can maybe do like 5 or 5:15,
yeah,
probably so I can get back. Yeah. I don't know if
that's 5:15. Does that work?
I can do it.
Okay.
And anybody else who wants to go there, do it? Oh, no, no, okay.
So do you want to have the Honeggers there and the residents?
10:13?
In case, you know, you want to get their thoughts or their experiences out there. Like that.
How hostile would that be?
I don't think any of the other residents are going to be hostile at all. I think the Honeggers wouldn't be hostile towards you. They'd probably be hostile towards me as the city entity, say. Because you basically said it for a while, it's not entirely our fault, this flooding issue you have. And it's taken a while to get to where we are. I don't think the only hostility they might have towards the commission is if there's a point where we file and the commission says completely no to the project. I think they'd more likely to call the mayor at that point and sort of complain there. But I don't think they're going to complain at the site, but they might just say, look, we've got flooding issues, please allow this one.
Is it really the corner house guy, the one that has the attorney that's kind of driving the thing?
Oh, the Honeggers, yeah. The Honeggers reached out to the attorney. They have a private attorney there, yeah. They're not attorneys themselves. Yeah.
No, but you said there was an attorney.
Yes, right. And frankly, their attorneys are unreasonable. He's misquoted some facts and things like that in his responses and, exaggerated situations that are... He's put things in his letter.
That's what you do.
No, but...
Said the attorney.
Thanks. But he's not just doing his job as an attorney. He's actually...
No,
factually,
I think he's just...
He's factually putting things... He's not just exaggerating, using words that exaggerate. He's actually saying, so-and-so said this or something was in this letter. The commission approved this on such and such date. Well, the commission didn't approve that. If you look at the plan, it's not what was approved. So, he's not just extrapolating, he's really...
it's just bluster.
Making it up as he goes.
It's bluster.
He's hoping you won't notice.
What's that?
He's hoping you won't notice.
Well, I ticked him off a little bit because I basically said, look, let's be honest here. I have no problem if he wants to say there's some sort of issue the city should address, but let's keep the facts right. I don't want to be chasing around with that all the time. It's better using my time.
What's the address of that?
13 Virginia Lane is the address.
13?
No, I don't think we have copies of that plan that you were showing earlier.
For Virginia Lane? I think I can email it to you. I think maybe it's a PDF. What's that? Did we get that? But you're talking about Virginia Lane, right?
Yeah.
I can email you that as a PDF.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. The Honeggers might be able to explain a little bit of the flooding issue. The residents, from my understanding, they just want to make sure that nothing we do is going to cause them issues, and frankly, it's not going to do nothing but improve their situation. The Honeggers are the only ones that actually have a current issue out there. So they're probably the only relevant ones to have out there. The other residents could care less, I think, as long as they're not impacted once the work is done. So.
And the other thing that might be useful would be to get a copy of at least the special conditions on the Palm Island one that we're going to look at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if we can get the...
Because that's really the issue. What got finagled and what got done right.
Yeah, I'll try and look up that. No, I don't have it with me.
I'm sorry, what was the...
With the Marchands that get
the OC on 1367 Street.
Yeah,
I'm sure I remember the bunch of special conditions.
With regard to all that, the trees.
Yeah, try to pull that up again. We could scan that.
I don't think that was just aesthetics. I think it was some
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of back and forth on that.
Yeah, we had discussions on the width of these walkways that could fit chairs with a walkway past them, and it was, they were very wide.
Decks.
A series of walkways which...
Interconnected walkways.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Well, if you don't have a Red Sox game to watch.
Oh, if you want to watch the Tigers and the Yankees series.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys typically do?